It's All Things Considered on 91.9 FM WUOT. I'm Hannah Martin. Historian John Meacham is concerned about the nation's fraying cultural and social fabric. His latest book, The Soul of America, looks at previous periods of division and distrust to see how what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature prevailed over fear and anger. In this conversation with WUOT's Brandon Hollingsworth, Meacham talks about what he learned.
There are many causes for division or polarization. It's multifaceted. Secondly, the causes are not always strictly partisan. Did your research for this book indicate if there is a common denominator or denominators that link or serve as some kind of a common background for these occasional periods of internal rancor?
They tend to be about fear of the other. That is, an attempt in the midst of great transition, whether it was from a slave economy to a free economy, whether it was from agrarian to industrial, industrial to highly technological, now more national to more global, which is what we're living through at the moment. Periods of extraordinary economic stress, which have cultural and social and ultimately political manifestations. And people look as they are anxious about their own livings, their own family's future, they tend to look for someone at whom to point a finger. And that has characterized each era of great division in the country. I think it characterizes this one pretty neatly. And my point is that we've always grown stronger the more widely we've opened our arms, in point of fact. It's not a partisan point, it's simply a historical one, that the more we have turned an open face to the world in terms of the free movement of people and ideas and goods, the better off we've been.
Well, of course, one of the points that's made in your book is that there are these periods of greater unity that prevail over the fear and anger. But I guess my counter to that would be, of course, you can't have a reaction without something to react to. There are those periods of fear, anger, polarization. What did you learn about how those periods tend to form and then how they evolve once they get started?
Well, they form, as I say, in existential moments when a significant number of Americans believe that their way of life is under assault. That tends to then have an organizing effect. That is, polarization leads to some kind of reaction, as you say. And then the test becomes, to what extent does that reaction come to affect the life of the whole? And let's start, since we're Southerners, in the Civil War, Reconstruction. The verdict of Appomattox was pretty clear, right? Slavery was to go. The Union was to prevail. We were to be a country where national authority prevailed. And yet, in so many Southern states, largely unreconstructed white Southerners attempted to continue to fight the war by other means. Instead of the force of arms, they used vigilante violence. They used a political argument that Washington, broadly put, was the enemy. And that has shaped our politics really for 150 years or so. It has been better and worse depending on a given era, largely determined by the level of prosperity in the country and the nature of presidential leadership.
Many of the decisions that you examine in the book, and we could use as an example the signing of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, you just mentioned Reconstruction. When those come along with the social and political backlashes that follow, they don't just exist for a moment or even a few years, but for decades or even longer. When the pendulum swings away from those periods of polarization, of fear and anger, they don't really do so cleanly or suddenly. You don't circle a date on the calendar and say, oh, this is when Reconstruction ended. This is when we got over whatever it was that had bothered us and had divided us. Coming out of those eras, Mr. Meacham, can be a really messy process. What did you learn about that?
Well, that Faulkner was right when he said that the past is never dead, it is even past. We're always part of, to shift from Faulkner to Yeats, I guess, we're part of all that we meet. We continue at this hour in 2018 to live with the implications, the unresolved conflicts, ancient wars, the Civil War. To some extent, the fact that you and I are sitting here talking about this is yet another chapter in the American Revolution, a drama that began in the mid-1760s and has pressed forward. Because what was the American Revolution at its best, but the great political embodiment of the idea that individuals have the power to determine their destinies and not simply follow an autocratic structure, which seems very grand and high-minded, but it has the virtue of being true. So you're right. I mean, it's very hard to say on this day, before this date, things were one way, after this date, they were another. But it does happen. History does give us these things. The victory in World War II gave America unparalleled global power. The end of official Jim Crow, which happened this week in 1964. Lyndon Johnson signed the act in the first week of July. 1964, he signed the Voting Rights Act in August, I think, of 65. Things were different after that date. They weren't all great. The kingdom of God obviously didn't descend on issues of race and ethnicity in America, but laws were being struck down on the force of federal authority. And so progress is possible. The story of the country, I believe, is one of increasing liberty. It's of a more wide interpretation of the sentence that we're all created equal. And that's not partisan. That's not Republican. That's not Democratic. That's not liberal. That's not conservative. It's not Northern. It's not Southern. It's not Western. It's an American idea. And it's what champions of both the right in America and the left in America at their best have argued for, whether it's Franklin Roosevelt or Ronald Reagan. And I think that the soul of the country, which is why I called the book this, is one that is neither all good nor all bad. But every era is defined by the struggle between our better angels and our worst instincts. And we're judged from generation to generation by the extent to which those better angels win out over the darker impulses.
Your book makes the case that the Republic has been through divisive periods before and survived, but you also throw in the cautionary note that that's not guaranteed. It takes a lot of work and a lot of buy-in. It doesn't just happen as a natural cycle.
No, that's the nature of history. The nature of reality is that we can slide back toward a state of nature at any point. The story of the 20th century in Europe is the story of seemingly civilized nations that descended into barbarism, mechanized, organized barbarism. And so nothing is guaranteed on this side of paradise. I think we are closer to working out the challenges of the moment than perhaps we think from moment to moment because of the nature of a news cycle, the nature, it's not even really a cycle anymore, it's just a cyclone. But, you know, the country has come through these difficult moments. Tennesseans in particular, and I'm a native Tennessean, should understand this in their bones because we were divided on the fundamental question of the Civil War from the very beginning. If you look at a map of the counties that voted to secede from the Union, East Tennessee was almost entirely Unionist, and then the farther west you moved and the more important the slave economy became, the more the Confederate cause grew in strength. So we've always been a state that, in my mind, a kind of microcosm of the nation, in that we have been divided. We have decided that ultimately our fates are better realized together than apart. But everything is a trade-off. And there are some issues of fundamental justice. There are some issues of fundamental human rights that should not be a subject of compromise and trade-off. But that's kind of ahistorical because the nature of power in any society, in any history, is that you give a little, you take a little, and you hope that ultimately, as Dr. King said, the line bends toward justice.
Some of your previous subjects have included, of course, Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill, and famously another Tennessean, Andrew Jackson, as well as Thomas Jefferson, figures obviously from America's past. But your most recent book, The Soul of America, is inspired by, as you said, your observances of current events, trying to look for historical precedents, but inspired by what's going on now. Did the process of research in this book and your status as a curious observer of the world we live in now help maybe shift the direction of what you plan to do in the immediate future, that you're going to be looking for more of this kind of same genre of writing, or do you want to maybe go back into the past and look for some other kind of subjects? What do you kind of, I guess I'm asking, how does it influence the way you think about what you're doing now?
Oh, it's a great question. And to be honest, I'm not sure. I believe that history is vital. I believe the only way we have to judge where we are is by knowing where we've been. Not that the past is somehow a how-to guide or a cultural GPS, and it surely shouldn't be cultural Zoloft. That is, just because things have been bad in the past doesn't mean they're going to work out now. My message is not, we've been here before, so relax. My message is, we've been here before, so let's learn how we got out of it and emulate those methods. And as FDR once said, try something. You know, if it fails, admit it frankly and try something else. But above all, try something. I think that spirit of what Roosevelt called a bold, persistent experimentation in terms of protest, of resistance, to use the current word, is vital for those who oppose the president. Those who support him and have an obligation to do the same thing, to make their case. What I hope, and this will affect, I think, how I fill my hours going forward, my big hope, my big concern, both hope and concern, is that something that's under assault right now is the idea that reason and rationality and openness to data, even if it's contrary to what we believe, is really falling apart. The rise of tribalism, of the idea that you pick a team and then the other team is always wrong no matter what. This is like UT versus Vanderbilt. You know, the life of the Republic is not a football game. And to live in these parallel universes where everything the other side does is wrong and everything your side does is virtuous and true is not being true to the American Revolution. And the American Revolution, I firmly believe, was about the capacity of reason to play a role in human affairs. And the founders knew it wouldn't always do that. They knew that it was going to be a close-run thing all the way through. I hope that my work in the next couple of years, whether it takes the form of biographies of ancient people or maybe even more recent ones, my hope is that it'll have the effect of illuminating the fact that being open to the power of evidence is an American characteristic that's worth defending and embracing.
John Meacham, historian, author, and Tennessean. His most recent book, The Soul of America, was published in May. He'll discuss that book and his findings at First Presbyterian Church in Knoxville on Sunday evening. Mr. Meacham, thank you for the conversation today.
Thank you.